Right. I think that was all it was, Tracy.
Vice President for Student Campus Life, Ryan Lombardi. We'll also have a presentation from Jana LeMay from the Big Red Barn. And then we have several pieces of legislation today. So I ask for you to bear with me. It may be slightly beyond 6:30 p.m. meeting, but we're grateful for that in the spirit of Thanksgiving. All right, with that, I'll turn it over to Annifer for executive committee updates.
Yeah, the only update I have to give you guys is to remember that we have the GPSA meeting on December 1st for the code of conduct, and that's it.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. Any questions for Executive Committee? Right. Seeing none, we'll move over to operations and staffing with Xander.
No update.
No.
And no questions. Great. I'll now move over to theme with the Appropriations Committee.
No update.
I'll move over to communications. Andy.
Nothing to report.
Thank you, Andy. Anu is not here. Is there anyone from the Finance Commission that would like to give a report on the committee?
No updates.
Thank you. No update. We'll now move over to Irene with the Student Advocacy Committee.
We have two resolutions on the floor today, 4 and 5, and we're excited to talk about that today, but otherwise, no updates.
Thank you, Irene. We'll now move over to Programming Board. Paul?
Very briefly, can I do an informal poll of the room? So the Programming Board has happened upon some really great luck recently. But I want your opinion. We could either do the gala on April 19th, it's a Sunday, at Barton Hall. I could sell approximately 900 tickets. The ambience is not what it is at Statler. That's okay. We'll do our best. The Statler I have for May 8th, which is what it was last year, and that is during study days on a Friday. Could I have a raise of hands for either? I'll say one and then you raise your hand. Which one you vote for? Informally, non-committal, I'm not taking names. Sound good? You have a question?
Yes.
Yes.
Can you state how many people can go to the Statler?
Oh, great question. About 500.
Also, Paul, can you say the cost of using Statler versus Barton just for the space?
Well, that's a little complicated. So I could go into the whole thing. If we were to use Barton, we would use either partner again with the Statler, or we would use Cornell Catering. The cost for Cornell Catering is less than the Statler. If I did the event at the Statler, it would be a little more pricier than it was to do the exact same event last year. We would have to figure something out if we did if we partnered with them to do it at Barton. So it would probably be Cornell Catering at Barton. They do similar stuff as the Statler for that event. Yeah.
Would tickets be cheaper for Barton?
They would not.
Can we call a vote, Paul?
I'll just shout it out and then you raise your hand if you feel so compelled. Barton Hall. Statler.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Right. Are there any questions for Paul and Programming Board? Seeing none, we'll move over to Alicia with the Diversity and International Student Committee.
Hi. So we had our Thanksgiving event, celebrate Thanksgiving DISC on Thursday. It was such a great event. We had a great turnout, around 80 to 100 people. And during the event, we actually did 3 trees where students could write about before their experiences or the things that they wish they had before coming to Cornell, at Cornell, and after Cornell, the kind of support that they need. So we are going to consolidate that in our next meeting after Thanksgiving and sort of see where students need support and is going to coordinate with Office of Global Learning to see where we can support the graduate students and sort of see what kind of support we could do. So that's mostly the update.
Thank you, Alicia. And if I could just say I stopped by the event. It was a very nice event. Lots of little activities. The tree was beautiful and lots of food. So thank you to Alicia and just to that. Are there any questions for the Diversity and International Student Committee at this time?
When are the meetings? Because I'm on the committee, but I joined.
Yeah, I think you're on the WhatsApp
Yeah,
group,
but I
right?
don't know where the.
It's normally on it's every other Friday at 3 p.m. in Baker 132.
Oh, every other Friday, you said 3 p.m.?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
I have an update from Jason. All right, now moving over to Faculty Advising, Teaching, and Mentorship Award Committee, or FATMAC. Make sure to advertise the FATMAC submission portal to your colleagues. Make sure people who make Cornell a great place to live, work, learn, and research are recognized. So that's in the communique. Is that correct, Andy? Awesome. So point people out to the communique, and there should be a link to make those nominations. If there are any questions related to FATMAC, I will connect you with Jason. The second update from Jason regarding the Special Grants Committee is we are currently reviewing the 58 proposals we received, and we'll look forward to presenting results and recommendations in January, which I'll add is right on schedule with the original charge. So congratulations to Jason and all the hardworking people reviewing 30 proposals each on the Special Grants Committee. And if there are any questions for special grants, I will also refer you to Jason for so. All right. At this time, I will now invite the graduate school to give an update.
Thanks, everyone. Dean Lewis sends his regrets. He's at his academic conference, his disciplinary conference for the year this week, so he was not able to join. I have three quick things to share from the graduate school. We're moving into a very busy time for many of us at the graduate school as admissions ramps up. So right now we're working very closely with most graduate fields as they think about funding and admissions targets for the next cycle. Most fields have deadlines that are starting to roll through early December and then into January. We're working with graduate fields to finalize what their targets would be, and we're optimistic that the targets this year will be a little higher than in 2025. So those are still evolving. We're also doing a lot of workshops to support holistic, equity-based admissions best practices to make sure that fields have the tools they need to do a really great job at admissions. Two other things that are on my list. We're working closely with graduate fields on getting spring appointment letters, assistantship appointment letters out, using sort of the new templates and the new timeline. So that's just happening in the background, but hopefully that'll make your appointment letters and those of your constituents smooth for the spring. And then lastly, I just wanted to note that as we get near the end of any semester, it tends to increase demand for some of our supports in the graduate school, including Jana's office with student life, but also career supports. So we've got lots of people that are ready and engaged to help students if there's things that come up as you know, sometimes the end of semester is changes in status, changes in sort of life choices and what students need. So we got a big group of people and just wanted to acknowledge and thank them. So that's it for the grad school.
Thank you. Any questions for the graduate school at this time? All right, thank you so much. Seeing none, we will now move on to our next order of business. Unfortunately, it seems like I believe we have a 5:25 p.m. arrival time for Kolokoff. And so with that, I think we can move on to a different agenda item for this moment. Is there any motion on the floor? Annie.
Motion to talk about resolution 4.
All right. Motion to place resolution 4 on the table for discussion. Is there a second? Second from Irene. Is there any objection? There being none, we will now move. Irene, you have 2 minutes to present, or Irene and Michelle, you have 2 minutes to present resolution 4.
All right. So essentially, resolution 4 is just a physical manifestation of a lot of the dialogue that we've been having in these meetings regarding the graduate professional student representation on the review board for the student code of conduct. There's a disproportionate amount of graduate students on there, so this resolution calls for more of them, essentially, so that we have better representation in that review process. That is the best way that I could explain this piece of legislation.
Disproportionate as an underrepresentation.
Yeah, like underrepresentation. Not like we have too many, we have two less. Yeah. So that's what's going on here. I will comment. I'll see the rest of my time, but I do have like clarifying points that I want to
You can
ask.
make them.
Right. So it says X4. That's just a, it's meant to be four, but X was just in case it got moved up or down.
So you should vote the amendment.
Right. So I would want a motion to amend that to delete the X. To
Clerical.
delete, yeah, clerical. So there's some clerical things. And then with the date talking about reviewed by the executive committee, I'd want to also motion to amend the date to be 17/11. It was brought forward to the executive committee on the 17th of November, and it was approved to be brought forward to this assembly.
All right, and you yield?
And I yield the rest of my
All right, thank you so much, Irene. In just a minute, for a few. At this time, we'll move into a question and answer period on resolution four on graduate and professional student representation on the Students' Code of Conduct Review Board. Are there any questions for sponsors, Michelle and Irene? Team.
So slides 40 and 41, both the nomination and selection process. How is this process taking place right now?
It is opaque,
Right.
so unknown in all of the ways, which is why we ask for clarity. So through understanding, it's maybe that someone who was already on the board knew another undergraduate student, so they were added. But as far as we understand, there is no formal process of election that adds people to this board.
So this section aims to attempt to provide a procedural standard for how people are being placed on this review board also.
Other questions for Irene and Michelle?
So, to clarify, please maybe share an update. Where is the review board right now with their work?
Can we send that to Nick? Because he's on it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, so there was a correspondence that went out from Maura Love, Dean of Students, sorry, Marla Love, Dean of Students, last week. And essentially, there will be kind of a tour of each of the assemblies and various constituencies that interact with the code, including code's counselors, faculty, graduate students, undergraduates. The GPSA has scheduled an additional meeting for the semester on December 1st. We are the first constituency that is in that lineup. And so that is the place to bring concerns about the code of conduct and procedures. And to kind of voice your ideas for how it could be improved. I think one thing to highlight here is that this time the committee is not, so to speak, putting out a recommendation yet. This is to collect information that will help shape that recommendation that the committee makes. And so, yes, that's where they're currently in their work.
Good question.
Any other questions pursuant to resolution four for Irene and Michelle?
I have a clarification. So when the code of conduct maybe gets reviewed in the future, is that almost, is that like systematic, like every 3 years, or is it when the community feels the need to review? Like if we, if they take up the recommendation for the like the selection process to be transparent, when we'll be able to see that? Or when would be the next time that would happen?
Right.
Because it's already feel like it's happening, so it's kind of like a
There's
little.
no formal process by which these committees are started, so I don't, that is something on, sadly.
And it's not like from the community, like the community
No,
cannot
this
request
came top down.
top down.
Mm-hmm.
So this actually is a way for us to have some control when
Yes.
it does happen, right? When we're called to and someone to have that review board.
Thank you.
Yeah, great question.
If I could add to that, I believe the intention was originally for annual reviews, but this is our fourth year in the code of conduct. And so they collect the data and now they're.
It's the fourth year in the code.
So they did a big revision 4 years ago, and then they did 4 years of data collection, and this is the first year that they're going in to
Got it.
actually review and
Okay.
reflect on how it works.
Thank you.
See, motion, Andy.
In the interest of time, I motion to close everything and go into voting.
Is there a second? All right. Is there any objection? All right. Without objection, we will now move into voting procedure. We are voting on resolution four on graduate and professional student representation on the Student Code of Conduct Review Board with clerical edits X parenthesis four parenthesis being converted to four, and the date of the Executive Committee's review being updated to 17th of November 2025. Those being taken with the clerical and without objection. Are there any questions on what we will be voting on? All right, there being none, we'll now move into voting procedure. All voting in the affirmative on resolution 4 may now raise their placards.
Oh, Eric, we can't see one of them because of the thing.
All right. I see them on the top. Yeah. All right, you may put your placards down now. All those opposed to resolution 4 on graduate and professional student representation on the Student Code of Conduct Review Board may now raise their placards. Going one, going twice, and all those abstaining may now raise their placards. All right, by a vote of 20-01, resolution 4 on graduate and professional student representation on the Student Code of Conduct Review Board, this resolution is adopted. All right. All right, well, that's terrific. All right, we'll now move into our next item of business. Sorry, is there no more? All right. Entertaining a motion to continue with the agenda. Irene.
Motion to continue to the agenda and talk about resolution 5.
All right. There's been a motion to place resolution 5 on temporary suspension due process and student code conduct reform. Is there a second? Second from Andy. Is there any objection?
Have we approved the meeting minutes? Are they in here?
They're not
in
here. They're not really. Striking from the agenda. Thank you. Okay. For the, no, yes, you do not have minutes for today. All right. Any objections on the motion to move for resolution 5? Seeing none. Irene, Claire King, and Michelle, and Alessandra, my apologies, made. You have 2 minutes to present.
Go ahead and start. So this is basically GPSA's way of talking about our recommendations for the Student Code of Conduct for consideration of the Student Code of Conduct Review Board. We talk about the use of temporary suspensions, due process, and just certain considerations as it relates to the well-being of students, especially in regard to how temporary suspensions were used previously, so much so that graduate students lost funding. There's a health insurance risk, housing risks. There's just so many things that were negative consequences of temporary suspensions, so much so that they were essentially used as punitive measures when in the end, these students were found not guilty. And so we were just talking about some of our critiques in the main resolution. And then there is two accompanying documents, one being the report that is listed behind the OSTCS annual report, and then our line-by-line recommendations as to how we say the Student Code of Conduct procedures should be edited, some of which being talking about putting a timestamp on how long temporary suspensions should be applied for and what means, right? So what constitutes a temporary suspension? And just a lot of like things where administratively it was up in the air, we put timestamps on that as well. So I have another clerical thing I just want to add that in mentions in the document, there's appendix B, it's actually appendix 1. So that's what is being referred to in, for example, line 112 and 75. But apart from that,
thank you.
I'll give the rest of my time.
Do you yield? All right, Irene yields. Standard.
I'm going to motion to table this till later in the remaining discussion until later in the meeting on resolution 5, as I think our president is out there.
Right. I see a second from Katie. Is there any objection? There being no objections, we will return to our original agenda, presentation 1. All right. Thank you. At this time, it is my pleasure to welcome University President Michael Kotlikoff, joined by Vice President for Student and Campus Life, Ryan Lombardi. We could give them a warm welcome to the GPSA.
And Marla is here as well.
as well as being a student smile as well. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So would you like me to start this? Would you like me to start with some comments? I've got the questions. I can go right into the questions or give you a little bit of an overview. We just came from the town hall where we talked about the settlement. I'd be glad to give you a little overview of the settlement as well. Well, so just briefly, we went into this this situation with two goals. One was to try and negotiate an end to what was a withholding of our grants and contracts, and kind of end the damage that was being done to faculty, to graduate students, to undergraduate students, to staff, in the extraordinary number of grants that were affected across the university. But the second goal was to do that consistent with our principles and not to compromise those principles in a way in which we provided the government with the ability to dictate our policies or tell us how to admit students, how to hire faculty, et cetera. And with this agreement, I believe we've achieved both goals. I say that because I would urge you all to read the agreement carefully. It wasn't it was in some ways misrepresented through leaks. But if you read the text of the agreement, you will see, I believe, that what we agreed to do was to obey the law, which I believe we have obeyed in the past and we will continue to obey in the future. We did not agree to change any of our policies. We did not agree to provide any data other than what the government is legally entitled to. We didn't specify in our agreement any of the language that was in some of the other agreements about questions that would be asked for international students or international graduate students about transgender policies, et cetera. None of that is in the agreement. And we only agreed to obey civil rights law. Now, we also agreed to provide the guidelines of the Justice Department as a resource, a training resource to faculty and staff. We have lots of training resources. We will provide those guidelines in the appropriate context. We think much of those guidelines go beyond civil rights law. But most importantly, unlike other agreements with other universities, we did not pledge to agree to those guidelines. We only pledged to provide them as a resource. So all of that, and I will every 3 months, you know, under pain of prosecution, specify that we're obeying the law, obeying civil rights law, and we will provide anonymized, de-identified admissions data to the government on a quarterly basis, as we have in the past. The government has the right to ask for those data, and we have to comply and give them those data. And so we will continue to do that. Lastly, I would say that the agreement does one more thing, and that is it puts us on a legal framework where we wanted to be from the beginning. That is, the agreement specifies that if the government has a concerns about Cornell's policies, has a concern that we don't abide by the agreement, or that we're not obeying the law, they're forced to go to district court, the District Court of Northern New York. So that puts us on terms. Now, I was asked in the town hall, couldn't the government just withhold your grants again? I can't, you know, sit here and guarantee that they can't withhold the grants again. But I can tell you that now we have a contractual agreement with the government signed by the Assistant Attorney General that we can take to court to say, we have this agreement. You're not abiding by the agreement. So they are required in this agreement to go to court if they have a problem with this, as opposed to just as before, you know, tweeting or leaking and withholding our grants. So all of that, I think, is the context for this agreement. I was a little disappointed that, you know, probably not surprised, but a little disappointed that the headlines of the grants were, you know, 30 million to the government and 30 million for farmers and Cornell settled. Nobody really did the detailed dissection of what we settled about and what was different about this agreement versus all the other agreements. And however, everyone who knows and has negotiated with the government, that is all the other universities, know very well that we've set a standard for what we would agree to and what we wouldn't agree to. We didn't cross any of the red lines that we established in at the start of this negotiation. So I just wanted to sort of give that as context. Be glad to answer any direct questions on that or go, oh, one other question I keep getting, maybe I'll just anticipate that. Where does the $30 million go? I get that a lot. We're providing $30 million, $10 million a year for the next 3 years to the US Treasury. It's like electrons into the grid. I have no idea where the dollars go. It's going into the Treasury. It's going out into Social Security or, you know, tax rebate, whatever it is. But we will provide that money generally to the Treasury, and then $30 million we're investing in ourselves, really, in our own research. So with that, I take any questions on that before going to these. Yeah.
Yeah. So could you address the morality of the agreement and its downstream impacts on the rule of law and for other institutions that are trying to defend themselves from an autocratic regime? It's particularly concerning to me, given, like, as you said before, the decision to provide $30 million to the government while at the same time you insist that Cornell has done nothing wrong. So I guess I'm just confused on how is this not appeasement and how is settling the standard for other institutions?
Yeah, I understand that point of view. And believe me, a lot of people have said from the beginning that any agreement with the government, they would oppose. We rely on government funding in this university, both for support of students, for our research enterprise, et cetera. There are a lot of people whose careers have been affected, who've lost jobs, et cetera, as a part of this. So that compelled me to try and get a reasonable agreement where we agreed to obey the law. The $30 million I'm not happy about, but I will tell you that we settle legal cases all the time. We settle legal cases because settling them is cheaper and easier than fighting them in court for years. We have now currently a 568 class action suit against the university. About eight universities have settled this already for, I think the last one was like $55 million. We think it's absolutely meritless. If we could settle that case for $20 or $25 million, we'd probably do it because we're spending that much money defending it and going through the discovery that the government can put us through. So that's just sort of realpolitik. The last part of your question about when others are fighting this, I will tell you, knowing every one of those presidents and every situation in which the government is putting this pressure on universities, the language that we achieved, other universities have asked for, and they would settle based on that language, all other things. Now, government is asking different amounts of money from different universities, et cetera. But that language crosses none of the red lines that all of us agreed we wouldn't cross, all of us. The group of universities that have been talking about this, we wouldn't cross. So I believe this has set a floor for what the government can get from other universities. And it's radically different than what Brown, Columbia, and UVA agreed to in their settlement. And I would urge you to look at those three agreements and our agreement. Just take some time.
Uh-huh.
Read what, okay. So, well, then you know what Brown and UVA agreed to, and certainly what Columbia agreed to, which is, you know, Brown, for example, has to send to the government the information of any harassment claim of any student on faculty or faculty on student or student on student, has to send that to the government. The government gets to determine, they have to tell the government within 30 days what they're going to do about it. And the government gets to approve that action. None of that is in our agreement.
Is there a question regarding the settlement?
Not as a follow-up.
Not about the settlement? Questions about the settlement? You have a follow-up?
So I understand that Brown's language is also explicit, or Penn's contract is also explicit about like denying the existence of trans people, right? So, and there's still language in this contract that allows, like the training materials, for example, will certainly have like information in them that are going to deny the existence of trans rights and like deny trans people. So how can you assure students that are trans that like this, that Cornell won't roll over at a later point, or that Cornell won't, or like that Cornell will actually defend these people who are incredibly vulnerable, especially now?
Yeah, so we obey, but we have state law and federal law that applies to these issues. We obey all that law. There's nothing in this agreement that changes our policies relative to trans rights. Yes, we provide the guidelines as part of training materials, but there's no language directly in this agreement on it, other than that we will provide those in the appropriate context as part of our training materials. But there's nothing in the agreement that changes our trans rights policies or anything of that kind.
And I'll just add, I mean, Mike mentioned it, but important also to note New York state law on these matters too, which are very clear and explicit about non-discrimination.
I have a question. So first, to follow up on that, so these training materials, you said that it will have to be part of it, but will it become a requirement for anyone to actually do these trainings?
So what we're working out now is how we're going to provide these training. We have lots of training, as a, you know, when people are in search committees, of course, for our admissions policies, lots of training activities. We haven't fully resolved the scope of how we're going to do this. I don't believe, it's not clear yet, but I don't know that, whether we will have this as part of a unified training program where you have these guidelines, you have a lawyer explaining existing civil rights law, and you have guidance to individuals about obeying the law, both state law and federal law. So we're working that out, but the idea will be these will be in context. They will be provided to faculty and staff in the context of what is law, and then what are guidelines that might go beyond law.
Eugene?
Yeah. So I wanted to ask about the topic of academic freedom. Because my impression is that most people, if you present them with the words academic freedom, they will say, yeah, it's important. But there are subtle like differences in the way that they define the term academic freedom. And like I noticed that in the language of the settlement, like there is a line that says something along the lines of like both sides agree that academic freedom is important, blah, blah, blah. Do you think that Cornell's interpretation aligns with the administration? And also, are there other alternative interpretations of academic freedom that might differ from the language of your settlement?
Yeah.
And like, how would you like, first of all, do you have any examples, or if not, like, how would you kind of resolve these differences?
Well, I don't really see, I mean, it's a great question. I think I saw a critique by the AAUP of the agreement because it's it doesn't provide a complete AAUP definition of academic freedom. Of course, there's lots, and even AAUP has varied over its history about their rights and responsibilities associated with academic freedom. The key thing here is there's nothing in the agreement that compels us to do anything other than what we're currently doing on academic freedom. So they do, we both assert that we respect academic freedom, and the government specifically states that they have no interest in bridging our academic freedom or determining what's in our curriculum. That's fine, but they don't, and you know, they don't say they have interest in bridging something else that's beyond curriculum that's covered by academic freedom. So the key thing here is there's nothing here that changes or supersedes our own academic freedom policy. And that's why I start with our policies are intact. There's nothing in this agreement that makes us change our policies, forces us to do something other than obey the law. Now, we take the law very seriously and non-discrimination very seriously, et cetera. And that, you know, sometimes that some people's definition of academic freedom is I can say whatever I want in the classroom. There are responsibilities that academic freedom and free speech are very different things. And there are responsibilities that go along with academic freedom. So we still respect that. We still will make sure that people are protected from harassment or somehow a violation of our own policies. But those policies aren't affected by this agreement.
I see. Yeah, thanks for the definition and clarification.
Yep.
Thank you. Alessandra, did you still have a question?
Yes, we appreciate, I'm sure the whole committee appreciates you guys spending time and answering our questions. You said that you were disappointed in the headlines that were going around regarding this agreement. Do you think that Cornell hasn't been proactive in trying to say otherwise? And because I also would not want this agreement to be portrayed in a negative light if that's not what it actually is. But I haven't seen much in terms of Cornell actually being vocal and saying, no, this is incorrect what these headlines are claiming.
Well, we did, we reached out to the Times, which initially said that we had agreed to comply with the guidelines. That was changed in the subsequent stories. I also released a statement at the time of the agreement that's been since criticized by individuals associated with the government, but it's my belief as to you know what we signed, what we agreed to. And then lastly, we just put out an FAQ just to answer some of these questions, because people would, despite that, despite the text of the agreement, despite what we've said about the agreement, people would still say, you know, you've paid a fine, or you've agreed with these guidelines or something. So I wanted, or this question of somehow the agreement doesn't fully protect academic freedom or our policy. So I wanted to clarify that. And I would urge you also to look at the FAQs. I'm not the New York Times, I can't, but I think we've done as much as we can to try and clarify the situation.
Thank you. Any other questions on this topic? Kate?
Yeah, so I'm getting this, I feel like you keep mentioning that there's a lack of certain kinds of language that compels Cornell to do certain things or prevents the United States from doing certain things. But I want to talk specifically about where language is very vague and how that opens the door to possible like further like encroachment by the federal government into Cornell. So specifically on the question of academic speech, if there's a quote that says the United States does not aim to dictate the content of academic speech or curricula. But the problem, or my question is like, aim is not about intent, which is in legal context, like hard to litigate against. Like it's hard to prove that the US like aimed to do anything really, but from personal experience, like academic speech and curricula has been chilled. So I guess with that, like these two pictures of like this vague language, like how are you gonna go about making sure that where language is vague, that there's actually like Cornell's not going to fold on this kind of legal jargon?
Yeah, so I think what you're basically saying is you don't trust us to defend academic freedom.
I mean, I don't say sorry.
So I know, it's fine. I mean, but the, as I said, I think the agreement states pretty clearly what we're responsible for within the agreement. If the government penalizes us for something beyond this, they have to justify it in the courts. And that's a significant improvement over the status that we occupied prior to this agreement. So I think you have to recognize this. Now you can say, and people say, well, you know, how can you trust them? Or they've only said they won't, they're not interested in changing curriculum or speech, but what about if they want to change your admissions policies or something like that? The only way they can do that in this, according to this agreement, is to assert that we've not obeyed the agreement and then take us to court based on it. And the final, one of the final sections states that they can no longer, they can't withhold our grants and or reinstate the civil rights accusations that we were under without going to court. And so that's just a significant improvement.
Yeah, I have a final, well, for this section, final question. So there's been a lot of talk that kind of treats Cornell as an individual, as in you're saying like, oh, our agreement is better or worse than so-and-so other university on so-and-so aspect. And my question is, where is there room for universities to still like stick together and defend themselves as a whole, as opposed to just like every institution looking after their own interests and just like, you know, doing the same like, oh, our agreement says so-and-so and there's, it's like so-and-so. Yeah, like how can Cornell still like create unity within universities?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, from the beginning, we were all in different circumstances. Harvard had an explicit letter laying out the basis on which all of their grants were stopped. We never got that letter. It prevented us, well, it significantly weakened our argument in going to court to say that this was a First Amendment violation, like Harvard did. And we were told, we were legally advised that we probably would be sent from district court to the Court of Claims, which has no immediate remedy, and we'd have to spend a couple of years fighting these legally in the Court of Claims to get our money back. So each university is in a somewhat different position, and legally there are also barriers in terms of acting together, sharing information, attorney-client privileged information, etc. So what we tried to do was get the AAU, the American Association of Universities, which represents the top 70 or so research universities, to file a suit on behalf of all its members. The problem is we couldn't get agreement of all the AAU members to do that, simply because many of the AAU members were not under attack at all and were in political areas where it would be very difficult to challenge the government. But what we did do was, I think, the maximum we could do, which was to try to form together the idea of what we would not agree to. And a number of universities did that and had these what I call red lines about what we would not agree to. And that's why I think this agreement sets a standard for other universities and is a demonstration that you can get the administration to agree to something that doesn't fundamentally compromise your independence.
Great, thank you.
Maybe in the interest of time, we can move on to some other topics. I know we have several questions laid out. Perhaps question four on the topic of student voice and shared governance. Maybe I can read it and you can
give
a response. Given widespread concerns about inadequate student representation and major policy decisions, such as the ongoing code of conduct revision process, how will Cornell ensure that student voices are meaningfully included before the university moves forward?
Yeah, well, I pledge, and I'll just repeat that pledge, and I'll let Ryan talk. I'm doing all the talking, but you know, this is a process that's stood up the student campus code revisions on a regular basis. It's in the code to do that. The idea here is that this is very similar to the expressive activity policy. We formed a a committee that what was appropriate for the subject. They spent a lot of time drafting something. They put that draft out to the university community for broad input. They got a lot of broad input. Once they did that, they revised the best draft. They had a near final draft. That went to all the shared governance bodies. Again, I will commit that that will come back to this body as well as other shared governance bodies for comment and discussion. That will then be evaluated by the committee. They will then draft a final, I assume a final proposal. And then, you know, if shared governance bodies continue to be, to object to it, then I think that's you have the option to provide a resolution on that or specifics about what is concerned about. But the main thing I want to pledge is that we will go through this process where everyone in this room will have the opportunity to look at the draft, consider it, think about it, and criticize it if you so want.
Yeah, I would only add that was our intent from the start, given that, you know, I think just before the school year started, we announced this in an all-campus email to all faculty, staff, and students, never intended to be under the cloak of darkness or anything like this, being very transparent, and laid out this process of taking input, listening sessions. I think there's one maybe with this body next week, if I'm not mistaken. And then, as Mike says, once there's a draft of any kind of revisions, that those go out publicly, additional opportunities for listening, feedback, changes. I also do want to make clear that this is, as Mike indicated, the intent and the way the code is written is that this happens every single year. This is kind of a living, breathing document that we can edit, we can update based on community feedback, based on community input. I know this moment feels like a big moment because it's the first time since this code took effect that that revision is going on. This is not an overhaul of the student code of conduct or the procedures. It's looking and seeing where there might be some revisions based on community feedback that would be applicable. I've been listening in on the committee meetings. Nick is on there, professional students on there. And the last two or three meetings, they've spent really dissecting and listening to the recommendations that the Expressive Activity Committee put out regarding temporary suspensions, really talking through those, really trying to make sense of them, and starting to think about what kind of suggestions they may make of this. Up until that point, it's been mostly grammatical edits, scrivener's errors. So it's not some big surprise, this is all different. It's really trying to look at these focused issues that have come up from the community feedback. And again, as Mike says, it will be put in front of the entire community for folks to give feedback on, react to.
Any questions on the topic, Michelle?
It's not on the same topic, so there's one on the topic.
Is there any question on this topic pursuant to student voice, shared governance, and code of conduct reviews? Irene?
So you talked about how this wasn't intended to be a cloak of darkness, henceforth the message that you sent out to everybody. I'm a little curious about how the members of the review board, however, were chosen. Was there consultation with the respective shared governances like University Assembly, GPSA, Student Assembly, Employee Assembly, Faculty Senate on the members of the review board, or were they simply chosen by which standard?
Yeah, so the code calls for the committee to be comprised of, specifically calls out Student Assembly and Graduate Student Assembly, since the code is only for students, so the primary constituency is students rather than employees and faculty. So for this first year, since it's the first time we stood up, the decision was to invite both the respective presidents of those assemblies. We did that. There were a few other undergraduates selected. Once Nick joined, he asked the committee chair, Marla, who happens to be here, for additional representation. I think he had heard maybe from this body and others for additional representation. And so an additional professional student was asked to join, I think he's in the business school, if I'm not mistaken. A professional student was asked to join the committee. I think going forward, and I think we've talked about this, or I've heard the committee talk about this, if the assemblies want to think about having who they want to put forward for these committees, I think we would be very open to that. I think in the first year, we went to the presidents of the organizations. They're elected by the campus to serve in those roles and ask them to do this. And this will, as I said, this will become a standing thing. Will it happen every year? So to the extent that the assembly can come up with a mechanism to identify those individuals that are going to be able to get informed on the code, bring helpful suggestions, all that stuff, I think we'd be open to that in the future.
Awesome. Thank you.
Any other questions on this one? Michelle, if you'd like to ask your question.
Okay, this is out of question two. So I'm sure you both know that Cornell has been labeled a hostile campus by CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. What concrete steps are being taken right now to address these students and to make sure that they're both safe, respected, and supported? And how does this differ from the current climate?
I'll be happy to talk about that. So I'll share a couple of things kind of over the last couple of years that we've made significant advances for our Muslim community. Primarily, I would say the big one, and it's symbolic, but I think it's really meaningful, that when I talked to Chaplain Newman about this, which is the Dewan Center for Muslim Life, which was created on the third floor of Annabelle Taylor Hall. This is largely out of a collaboration that Marla and I had with Chaplain Newman and with Mecca to significantly expand their space. And so they have a community space now. Chaplain Newman's office space is adjacent to that, and it's become a much more of a hub of student life for our Muslim students on campus. And probably, I was gone for a bit of time last year, so just, I think it was just maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, I met with Chaplain Newman again, a professor from Near Eastern Studies, Avery August, who's our deputy provost, Kavita Bala, who's our provost, to really begin brainstorming what else can we do to support the community going forward. And so we brainstormed a number of things in there with regards to helping the community better understand some of the challenges that our Muslim students face on campus. A number of things, like, I'm not remembering the list right now, but a number of things like that that we're going to work together collaboratively with moving forward.
I just add that this is a great concern to us. I think the certainly people feel at risk on campus, and we've seen that from the surveys. And so they're both the outreach that that Ryan and his group has had, and I've talked to Mecca and the chaplain and faculty about this. It's difficult because we don't control the political environment. We don't control all of the outside inputs here. But this is part of protecting every Cornell student on campus. It's the effort of non-discrimination and non-harassment is not simply non-discrimination and non-harassment pointed in any direction. It's non-discrimination and non-harassment of every student on campus.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think making some of those recommendations transparent, and also, or the things that you're—
the conversation with,
And also including affected students in those conversations would be really meaningful. I think that having the community identify what would best suit them and their needs and what would make them feel safer would maybe be a really good place.
I totally agree. Before I had gone out on sabbatical, I spent a lot of time with the then co-presidents of Mecca and built a very close relationship over time. I need to reestablish that now.
Yeah, there's also an Arab Graduate Student Association, AGSA.
Thank you.
In the interest of time of our guests, I think we have time for one more question. Is there anybody who has not asked a question? Tian, please.
Hello. You know, I applaud the administration that you got a deal, because I bet that was incredibly difficult, especially all the complexities of everything around us. But then, although we have an agreement, it feels like the threat of budget cuts are still present in a lot of our schools. So my question, it's part one, part two, is like, how do you emphasize, you know, the deans of schools and department chairs to act the long-term effects of their short-term cuts to classes and even programs? For instance, the Master of Historic Preservation in the Plan Department of AAP feels like it's going to be posed to be cut due to, you know, low enrollment. But then how can you guarantee the voice of graduate students in that program feels they have someone there? Sorry about this. How can you know that their voice is being heard to the university while their own college and their department chair isn't listening to them?
Well, that's a very tough one. I mean, low enrolled courses you know, every department, every college makes decisions all the time about, you know, what's based on demand, based on student interest, et cetera. The bigger issue here is that the university and every university is facing substantial financial headwinds right now. So, you know, this component of the settlement is just one side. So it takes off the table, presumably, and we've gotten our back. It takes those issues off the table. But we've seen extraordinary increases in costs across the university. We have pending endowment taxes. We've got indirect cost reductions. We have other federal reductions in granting agencies. We've had accelerating legal costs and personnel costs. And all of that has created significant financial headwinds for the university. So, you know, our responsibility is really to create a fiscal situation in which the university is healthy. It can continue to generate resources to focus on excellence and can keep reinvesting on our core missions. And that's something that just our responsibility to go through. Some of that causes some pain. Some programs may need to be cut. You know, the university is very good at creating new programs. It's not very good at ending programs that are no longer viable. And at some point, you need to be able to say, okay, this program doesn't have the demand or doesn't have the interest that it had when we started it 10 or 20 years ago or something. And it's time to either merge it into something else or cover that material another way or do something different. So it's unfortunate, but the alternative of maintaining every program that anybody has interest in is just not financially feasible. I hope you can understand that.
I think I saw a second hand at the same moment I asked for last question. Do you have time for one more question?
Yeah, sure.
Alicia?
Yes. So I think we are talking about excellence in the university, and we are from chemistry department. And recently, our supervisor, in spite of being publishing 40 plus papers in last 6 years, bringing over 3.3 million in grants and having like 9 plus PhD students and having like a successful research career, has been denied tenure. And we like strongly feel there was like no transparency in the process, or there was no fairness in the process. So I was wondering, like, you know, sometimes the chemistry department is so huge. So maybe the things that we do might not be like understood by the whole department. So is there any way to centralize the process where a person is being treated or like judged based on the academic merit, rather than being, you know, some political dynamics or like any sort of like powerful like dynamics that's been going on in the department?
Yeah, well, I don't know anything about the case you're talking about, and I can't say anything obviously specific about a case, but I will just spend a minute to describe the process to you, because I was provost for 9 years and I oversaw the, you know, the university committee that made a final recommendation to provost, and I had to make the decision. A final decision about tenure. Tenure is one of the most significant processes that we undertake at the university. It's very carefully constructed to get all voices involved. So the first step is to go out for collegial letters from colleagues outside to evaluate your work on a national level. We have the expectation that individuals achieve a national reputation as part of a tenure. Then the department reads these letters, evaluates these letters. They have a vote. The chair of the department weighs in on that, can disagree or agree with that process. Then there's a separate ad hoc committee outside of the Department of Chemistry that would weigh in and have three external scientists. But Cornell scientists also make a recommendation. All that goes to the dean. The dean then makes a recommendation, and then it goes to a standing committee, which is the provost task force, which also looks at all of this material again, and that's teaching evaluations, research evaluations. There's a self-study by the faculty member, and then each of the members of that committee make a recommendation. So there's plenty of opportunity for the voices that you're talking about in terms of, was this fair? Is this individual really outstanding? And the process is fundamentally about merit. So I don't know anything about the particular situation you're referring to, but I think there are appeal processes for the individual if it's turned down at the department or turned down at the dean or turned down. Dean or department that can be appealed. So all of this is meant to make a very difficult decision, and I'm very sorry that you've been caught up in this, but this is not a transparent process. It's a process that's fundamentally about evaluating an individual scientifically and having individual scientists who are capable of doing that, making those evaluations. Sorry.
At this time, I'd like to thank President Kotlikoff and Ryan Lombardi for visiting us today, as well as Dean of Students Mara Love. If we could all give them a hand. Thank you.
Everyone has a good break.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes.
All right. At this time, we will now move into our second presentation. My pleasure to introduce Associate Dean for Graduate Student Life, Jonah Lamb, who will be presenting on behalf of the Bond this evening. Jenny, you have the floor.
Super. Thank you so much for being here and taking the time. For those that don't know me, I'm Janice Dynamay, and I am the current Associate Dean for Student Life at the graduate school. And so what that means is I do two things. One, I meet with students all the time. So if anybody has any questions or concerns, please feel free to look me up. I'm happy to chat about your experience. The other thing that I do is help support a healthy student life experience, aka the barn comes into play here, okay? And so one of the things that we want to do is make sure that you have a place to go, a place of community, a connection, a place to just unwind and be yourself. So I come today to you to talk more generically as far as about the Big Red Barn. I don't think we've had this conversation in the committee for quite a while, Seattle. And so I'm hoping to bring some ideas to you, to be transparent as far as where the barn is at and perhaps, you know, what it is that we need to do moving forward. We know that the GPSA loves the barn. We love the barn. The graduate school, we look at ourselves as stewards to helping to support the barn. And so this is essential as far as that we have a communication about what's going on. So I don't think I'm going to have any answers for you today, but I'm hoping that we can start just a conversation. So I don't know how to get this moving. So there we go. So I think I was told I have 30 minutes, so I'll try to keep on time. I'll try to be a little bit lighter. Anyways, I have three things that I want to do. I'm going to give you just a brief background to what the barn is about and what we are doing right now and a little bit of a history. And the big thing I want to talk about is, like, what is our current thinking about the barn, okay? And so myself and my colleagues at the graduate school and our barn staff and some students, you know, we're always thinking about how can we make the barn a better place. You heard a little bit about the realities that are going on. And so let me tell you that the realities at the barn, they're happening as well. And so I'm hoping to give you some ideas as to what we're thinking about and to get some feedback as to what you may be thinking about as well. And then ideally, you know, start a conversation is what I'm looking to do. So let me go through a little bit of what the barn is about or the overview of what the barn is. So first thing, sorry, Jessica. Yeah. Okay. The first thing I want to just highlight is that, like, who operates the barn? And so it's our graduate students. It's a place for graduate students, from graduate students. Anybody here, a staff member or has been a staff member at the barn? Maybe a fellow staff member? Yeah, there we got one in the back. Anyways, I want you to know that we have 30 to 35 graduate students that operate the barn. They're the ones that you're interacting with. So sometimes students think that, oh gosh, there's a professional staff. Yeah, we have some professional staff, but it's our students that actually make this barn operate. There's 30 to 35 of them. Okay, so they make sure that they can serve beer, keep the place safe, and you know, try to have a welcoming environment so that when folks come to the sites, you know that you're there. We have 9 fellows, okay, at the barn, and so they're the ones that actually do our programming. So if you're coming in and doing an arts program, it's our arts fellow. Anybody go to the fashion show? Okay, yeah, I know. Paul was, yes, you've been there too, Irene, excuse me. So that's another event that our barn fellows came together and wanted to do. Anyways, we have these fellows. I can talk more about that later. We do have some administrative staff. Like I said, we think of ourselves as stewards of the barn. And so we have Claude DeCrestro. He is our Big Red Barn manager. He's currently on leave right now. We can't wait for him to come back. Okay, so know that that's not a permanent thing, but we do have the position available. We have We also have Victoria Bell, so she's our Big Red Barn student life coordinator over there, and so she'll be there and present, and then myself. And then I just want to call out, with Claude being out right now, it's been Olivia Hopewell, she's our graduate student life advisor, so she and I have pivoted to make sure that we can have the barn operate as it normally would with a manager, okay? So anyways, next one. So this is what drives us, and so I hope you like the images. These are really nice, I think, as far as to see you all happy. We want connection and engagement, okay? We know that physical space has a sense of peer belonging. We know that that's a really good thing for you all to be experiencing. We want it to be inclusive and student-centered, absolutely. Health and well-being, as I mentioned earlier, is one of our drives. We want to have something for everyone. That's sometimes difficult to obtain, but we want to make sure that everybody feels like they can come into the barn. And then finally, we want people to have a good time. And so this image, I love it because people are smiling. Yes, people are smiling. And so this is really what this is about as far as for us. So our next slide is about some of the activities. You all know this, but you all serve 10,000 students on campus. So between the graduate school students, which is about 5,000, we also are serving our professional students, our MBA, law, and vet. And then we also serve some of the professional masters. So it's 10,000 students that can come through the barn. I'll just point out that the barn holds about 156 at max. You go in the fall semester, it's like 200 to 300 at TGIF. So anyways, there's a constraint there as far as our actual physical space. We do over 500 events every year, and so we have some of our signature programs. Trivia, Sam, you go to trivia. Anybody else do trivia night? Fantastic, okay. We have TGIF. I'm assuming most folks here have been to TGIF. Fantastic. Those are some of our signature programs. We have some fellow-led events. Those are really nice because they're opportunities that have to be for everybody. Okay, so they open it up so that everybody can come to the barn, and they do it one a month. So we have 9 events a month that are open to everybody with our 9 fellows. And then we have some student organization events. And so they can also be open to everybody as well, but you'll have some graduate student organizations that want to come to the barn. And so we make them available as well. I do want to point out that the barn staff, so Victoria, Claude, or I, or Olivia, we're not doing programming, okay? We're helping to support the students that want to do programming. And that's really important as far as that our programs are led by students for students, okay? And that's how we philosophically look at what it is that we're doing, okay? The next one is... it was a fashion show. I was really impressed. That was a really great event. I just want to note, I hope you're all on Instagram under the barn. If not, the address is on the side. I can send that to you later. I couldn't get that slide to look good. But anyway, here's a whole listing of all the events that we've had. And so I just want you to know that come that just the fall semester, those are some of the things that we did. We have a book club, a slumber party social, Diwali happen, barn to baby, fashion show, bingo nights in the barn. So there's a lot of opportunity for a lot of different folks to be able to use that space. So, okay, next one. Okay, Jessica.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're okay. I clicked the wrong button and I messed everything up.
That's okay. I got my slides over here if I need to.
You just need to go back to this slide. The bottom.
Here we go.
Thank you.
No problem.
So some of the other things. A morning, I hope you know that the barn is available. We have write-in. That's our big program. We have the dining staff, which is a relationship that we have at the barn, is there doing some light breakfast. And then so it's open between 8 and 11. I didn't put the time. Midday, it becomes a dining unit. So you know Cornell's dining is in there. We have a lot of students that come through and then use it as a dining space. And then the evenings, this is when most of our programming occurs. It starts at 3 o'clock and lasts until about 10 o'clock at night. And then Fridays, obviously, we have TGIF. And then on the weekends, clubs and organizations can use the barn as well. And so we typically, about one event every week we have going in the space. So the next thing, I think we're going to switch on over. Yes. So here are some of our current thinking. I have 4 big topics, and I have some questions available. And I think what I want to do is go over the big topics, and then I'm going to leave you with the questions. I'm going to look at Nick to see where we're at in time. Okay. And what I might do is just leave you with some of the questions and ask for your input. Okay. So please, this is a good time. We're doing a lot of reflection, trying to think about where we want the barn to go. And so, like I said, the graduate school, we want to partner with you on this. So our first thing, so it comes to these 4 categories, but let's just go on to the first thing.
Sorry. Oh, is it the next slide?
Yep. Next slide. Okay. So the first thing that we're thinking about is the actual space. Like what are the student needs? Like what is the program? And what's our strategic plan? How are we going to evaluate this? And so this is something that I've been thinking about a long time and trying to figure out, okay, what are we doing? I will tell you, I'm most interested in who's using the barn, who's not using the barn, why or why not? Like, are we meeting the demands? We take the emphasis from the students in creation. So we think and we assume that that is what other students would want. But is that right? I'm not sure. And so who's coming to the table? Who wants to actually be participating? So I leave you with these two questions in thinking about this and trying to partner with us. Is how are we effectively capturing what the graduate students want and need from the barn? And so I ask you that. I'm not asking for an answer right now. But as you're working with your peers and colleagues, please be talking to them. Like, what does the barn mean to you? And, you know, is this meeting your needs? Is this what we want? And then what are some of the core programming goals and how are they evolving? I think about some of the years I've been here for a while, and what we're doing now is different than before. And it may be okay because our graduate students are the ones who are designing the programs, but maybe not. And so this might be a good time to be able to reflect on what our programming goals are and what are our student needs. Okay, again, just sort of sit with that and think about it. Our second area that we start to think about is we're thinking about the barn as a social atmosphere, beer, wine, service. I see some smiles right now, so I know I'm hitting something, okay? So we know some of the things that I just want to point out to you is that we know that this is part of your social environment, absolutely. But I want to point out as far as compliance for beer and wine is significant, okay? We have to do a liquor license. We have to have training for all those 30 to 35 staff to be able to serve. Okay, we need a full-time staff person there present to be able to serve beer, okay? So this is a big deal for us as far as the time and sometimes the financial piece about the beer and wine. Like I said, the position of the graduate student life coordinator, that's a new position in the last couple of years, and it was developed and designed because we needed to have somebody there to be able to serve beer and wine, and so that's significant. We hope that maybe some things have changed, we don't know, but again, all things on the table, this is, you know, a piece of what we do. The expense for beer and wine, like everything else, has gone up. I think most folks would accept that, okay. And then finally, I've heard this over the years that the barn feels too beer-centric, alcohol-centric. That we have students that I know that are not using the barn because of beer. I don't know. Maybe that means nothing to us. Maybe it does. As far as in your social groups, what do you think? So I leave you with these two questions about this. How does the beer and wine service influence is the barn's social community? Like, what does this do for you? And, you know, how does this impact what you do? And then finally, this is a little bit more specific, but I'm always curious. We have this happy hour on Friday. But we really have happy hour Monday through Thursday where we're doing beer and wine for all times. I think that's a yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Monday. But do we need to? Should we be thinking about this a little bit differently as far as it's okay? No, I think you represent what some folks think. But I'm just asking as far as is this the best way that we do beer and wine service? Okay. And what do we need? And should we be thinking about how to adjust this or not? So again, this is just current thinking. I'm seeing some smiles. I'm not sure if they're good or bad, but I'm just going to go on to point three here. So this is one of the things is the barn's response to Cornell budget. Okay, so you heard the budget's, you know, not so great at Cornell, and the barn has their responsibility and obligation to also do some things. And so this makes some of the stuff that we're talking about more important as far as that we got to figure out what it is that we're doing at the barn so we can be strategic about some of the budget stuff. So I just want to point out as far as staffing at the barn, yeah, we have a full-time position in the last 2 years to serve alcohol. Does that make sense? I don't know. Okay. The second piece, graduate student staff positions. There's 30 to 35. If I had the fellows, that's 45 people. Like, that's significant. I'm so grateful that we have students running it, but that's an expensive operation. It really is. I'm not suggesting we're going to change that, but I am saying that, wow, what are we going to do about this? Is there ways that we can do this better? The other piece, barn inefficiency. Anybody use 25 live? Okay, I hope you're all smiling about that. It's a tough system. Now, we're the receivers of those 25 live, and I'll tell you, That's complicated. So we got to think about some of the inefficiencies at the barn to be able to do some of these things so that we can hopefully save in some of our time and effort. And then finally, this is a very specific one, the write-in program expense. Holy cow. The write-in, you get coffee, correct? That comes from somewhere, comes from the graduate school, has been for a few years now. It's up to $5,000 in the month of November for coffee expenses. And so I don't know. Let's just start with the financial. And so I'd love to have a conversation about, like, what are we going to do? Like, literally, I can't afford that as far as from the office of student life. So what are we going to do? And so that's a very specific piece. But I want to leave you with this idea that, hey, look, what criteria can we use in identifying what the barn's priorities are? Because it's going to cost something, right? And then the other thing is, like, how do we measure the impact? I don't know. You know, I normally hear, you know, how many students are we serving? Well, maybe, maybe not. But we got to think those things through so that we can better, you know, utilize our resources and what we have. So the fourth and final, that'll be done, is collaboration with the GPSA. Okay, I'm assuming that you all love the barn as much as I do, and that you are stewards of the barn as well. And so I would love to better partner as far as how we can figure this out. So collaboration, this is what I'm thinking you guys are all about. I thought I took that part out, so please apologize. But you know, this bottom part, like what shared goals do we have? I want to call out that the GPSA has asked to meet with us at the barn. So this isn't anything new. So I appreciate that we're doing that. But what kind of collaboration can we have? What does that look like? I think we're at a moment in time that we can do some of these key thinking and trying to be strategic about what the future looks like. And then what structures or practices would help the barn, which is part of the graduate school, and GPSA work together most closely. So I think I have just one more. So I'm going to open it up to your guys' feedback. Nick, do I have time or I would talk?
You have time. You have 15 minutes.
Are you sure? As far as that?
I'm sure.
I talked really fast and I know I was because I was trying to get through all that. So I'm going to, questions, Michelle. Did you have questions?
Am I allowed to? I don't think a lot of graduate and professional students actually know that alcohol is served through the entirety of the week and at the same price. I don't know if this would be better or worse for your budget because it is highly reduced.
Yeah.
But potentially increasing advertising there, and we have a really wonderful way to reach all graduate and professional students through Andy's
MBK. Absolutely.
Because that's kind of the number one thing when I've been trying to ask people if they'd rather see less alcohol or maybe less programming.
Yep.
At the barn, they are surprised that it's actually served all 5 days.
Yeah. I think most folks are surprised about Monday through Thursday and the beer. I just want to say that it is subsidized by the GPSA, but it doesn't pay for the full cost of the beer. Okay. And so I know Jason's here. We could talk about the math about that another time as far as that works out. But I just want to put out there as far as that $1 beer and what comes in from the GPSA isn't a complete wash. And we have students that are working it. We also have that position that, you know, the graduate student life advisor. Or coordinator, excuse me, there as well. And so it's not a wash. But I think you're not wrong as far as, you know, students knowing that it's not available. I think you're right as far as that most folks think that the happy hour prices, you know, happen on Friday, but not necessarily throughout the time. And I don't know, I guess I would ask you, does that matter then? Do you know what I mean? Is that, if that's a way to save costs, maybe we should be considering it.
Yeah, I don't have the direct reporting ones when I first started GPSA, but I do remember them saying repeatedly that if a cost had to happen, the first thing you would see is the change in the price.
Say the last piece of it.
They said essentially if a cost-saving measure had to be taken, the first thing you would see is a change in the price of alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that would have been probably Jen Forbes is who you were talking to during your time. Yeah. And so, yeah, and she was mathematical like that. And so, yeah, I'm sure as far as that's what she would say. And I don't think that has necessarily changed. Again, please know that I don't have an agenda here. My agenda is to start this conversation. So please understand that. Thank you.
Other questions for the channel? We'll go Katie, Irene.
So he's on the e-board of a very large graduate student club, and he came to me with particular concerns about the barn's food policy. And I know this is more of a Cornell Dining problem than a you problem, but I was wondering if there's any like dialogue with Cornell Dining to allow for like students to bring in outside food into the barn space. I know it's like a really
no, I appreciate you asking it. No, I'm thrilled to be here and to be transparent about what's going on. I'll be honest with you, I've been sitting through the meetings, and when they had dining here, I was like, somebody gonna ask about dining into me in the barn, please, but it didn't come up, and that's okay. Yes, we have an agreement with. Just understand the history of using the barn. Dining came in, and that was thought of as a good thing as far as that, okay, we'll bring more people with some food options and then be able to, you know, have what we need for us as far as for programming such and stuff. So anyways, we're still talking to folks. And so we have a meeting coming up in a month or so trying to figure out, like, what can we do? They do provide some service to the barn, so I don't want to negate them completely. You know, who cleans our bathrooms, who takes out the trash. And those are real facility kinds of costs. Who does the light bulbs? Like, they pay for some parts of how the barn operates. But we need to talk about this because I hear clearly, you know, the need of having some flexibility and bringing in some outside food at certain times would be a good thing. And so, and that's something that I know Jen, Michelle was talking about as well, as far as trying to bring in or allow student groups to bring in. It may not look like everybody, but hopefully we can come up with some kind of agreement that would allow. I don't know when or where, so don't count me on, you know, quote me on that. But I think, you know, that is something that we're considering working towards. Yeah.
Other questions?
quick follow-up.
Yeah.
How, if there's like particular like grads who are very interested in this, how or what can I tell them about how they can like get involved, if at all? Or is it like your hands are like out of your hands?
Get involved with it as far as being a staff person or
No, I guess with like just like the food question, like
yeah.
help. Yeah, I
No, I appreciate that. I would start with Nick and the e-board up there as far as like what can we do, and we've had some conversations about that. I think right now, Jason and I are meeting with our colleagues in dining just to learn more, a little bit about what those costs are, so
Yeah.
that we can figure out what the in between would be. But I would love to work with GPSA, and I think we have another meeting. There might be a need to have some more discussion about this here, especially if it's important for this body to be able to have that flexibility. So thank you.
To that question, Katie, Xander and I sit on the Big Red Barn Student Committee, and so more of GPSA is welcome to join those meetings and give input on, in a more isolated setting, just about Big Red Barn.
Absolutely.
I'd be happy to have more people.
Absolutely. Be great.
We'll go Irene and Claire.
So I have a staffing question because you talked about how you have 45 workers. I'm curious if they work 10 or 20 hour workdays, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so if they're a PhD student, they can only work up to 5 hours. Okay, so with an assistantship or even a fellowship, they can only work up to 5 hours a week. So that means one event is basically what they're doing. So they're either there's TGIF or a Wednesday night shift, or like one time. We do have some professional degree students on it, and they can do up to 20. I would say between 7 and 10. I think they do probably 2 hours or two shifts a week is what ends up happening. We need more folks. And so you all are going to hear some announcements as far as for people. The hours aren't working up for this number of students that we have, which is a challenge. It really is, as far as to get that many people through what they need to be able to work, and then to be able to only work that number. It's a special place as far as that the students that join the Barn staff and fellows, they're their own community. And so if you see them, they're there because they want to provide an opportunity for their colleagues and peers to have some community of what they're getting from. And so I love the model. It just, we're going to need more folks. And I don't think we're going to change the hour kind of thing. It may mean that we need more professional degree students that don't have the hour limitation or have, up to 20 hours to be able to work, but it's something that we're looking at for this company's way. So you'll hear from us soon as far as for this.
Thank you.
Yeah, go
There's
ahead.
a photo
Ready?
there than
No, you go, Nick. Go ahead.
I think that a concern I've heard a lot, just like in my groups, is like whenever you try to go to the barn during the day when we're on campus, there's like a million undergrad. And personally, like I love the barn. I'm there a lot. I love
Fantastic.
her. But if I try to go at all during the day and try to get any work done, like write-in is not quiet anymore because there's always like a ton of people kind of talking. And so I'm wondering if there's like even a conversation within the Big Red Barn to make it like truly graduate and professional student place. And I totally get the like the food, like you need to sell food, and undergraduates have money to do so. And I don't want to like fault that, but I'm just wondering if there's like if it can be shortened to hours. Because for me, it just really
Yeah, I got you. I got
pushes
you.
me away.
Yeah. And I don't want to dismiss the undergrads. There's volume as far as that, that there's many students that can come through. Yeah, okay. That could come through and support a dining unit being there. And so it's been something I've heard over the years. I'm not sure where we're going with that. I will say though, you're speaking to sort of the write-in idea, which has been that there's I don't know what that. Okay.
And probably someone's on the balcony,
Oh.
which they're not supposed to have access to, but that's fine.
Okay, I'll go on and talk about the barn. Anyway, so the morning hours, the write-in idea was to be graduate student only, and my hypothesis is that more students are coming because of the free coffee, and they may not be working as much, and so that may be one way that we can shore it up to make sure that it is graduate students that are there. We got to keep talking about this. I don't have a really great answer for you as far as what to do, but it's something that we've heard over the time. How can we make this space to be more graduate student focused? I think we do well for 3 o'clock. It is during the day that we struggle with it.
Yeah, so just a follow-up question. You say you have a 5 hour limit. How early is B available from Monday to Thursday? Is it already starting at 3 p.m.?
3 p.m. Yep, it starts.
Like
Yep.
realistically, who Drinks beer before five.
Sorry.
Okay, yeah. You sound like a type of person with an exactly 5 hour windows for like, it's maybe less cost.
Yeah, well, I appreciate where you're going with this, and I think
Sorry.
no, and it's not about any individual person, but I think you're giving us the idea that yeah, we've probably got to learn as far as when our students are there and what's going on. I've been there very late at night and trivia night, you guys
It's really
go
that I think
until
it's a high point.
yeah, exactly 9:30, 10. I think people have something in their hand, but most nights, 7, 8 o'clock, maybe not so much. And I think if we played with the hours, that might be a good way to try to figure out what it is that we can do here to move forward. So I don't have an answer again for you, but I think
It's
it's
just
something
an
that we should be
idea.
looking at.
Not...
But we should be looking at. Go ahead.
I just have one more idea, and
Yeah,
it's that
please.
like I have a lot of friends who don't drink who do say like sometimes going to the BRB doesn't feel totally welcoming. And I think that like if you had a drink that wasn't like soda but something fun like a non-alcoholic cider, so they could go up at the bar, like feel like they're included, like they're going to the bar with their friends, they're getting a drink, but they don't have to drink. Because I've like, I just want them to be included, like even though I'm there at 3 p.m. That's just a really quick idea.
No, that's not, but all these ideas I think are really good, and that may hit what we're thinking about as far as that. Hey, look, it does this barn, is it accessible to all? Do all feel comfortable and and welcoming to the space? And I think that would be a great strategy as far as what we should be considering to do. And so I welcome this conversation. Again, I'm not committing to anything, but I welcome these ideas. Go ahead.
In actually adding to this, I have a fair amount of people who come and go like, "How can we get coffee or can we get tea?" And there's like no place because current dining's off, and they're like, "And we can't serve them unless there's an event." So it's like, it's things like the regular, the actual need that I've seen from people. And then also to your point, there is a fair amount of demand before 5 p.m. There's a few regulars who come for
Okay,
tea.
no. Also, I think the soda machines are available.
Yes,
they are
Oh,
available.
you
can
Yeah,
get it. So, like, there is an alternative for.
well, if
it
people
doesn't
don't.
feel
It's not an alcohol-free
as
cider, but
but
it's
people
something.
want soda, they want coffee or tea
Yeah.
because and
Yeah.
that doesn't work.
Usually.
Have we had a motion to extend the meeting time?
Proactively, you put 7 p.m.
Put 7. Okay.
So, are you okay?
Oh.
Okay.
Hey.
Yeah.
I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about you have somebody on leave and how has what has the impact been of that? You mentioned that Olivia's come in and helped help the responsibilities have been split. What is the current situation on the ground, I guess, in terms of those currently working in the barn, including yourself, on how your workload has increased?
I appreciate Paul, you asking that. I think Claude has been out on leave since the end of July. Okay. And so know that we're committed to him and the position. And so we're hoping for his return and looking forward to his return when he is there. Right now we're in the position of we've shifted. Understand that both Olivia and my role has a programming, like a student life kind of feel. So this isn't a far reach for us to be able to do. The reality is that we meet with students too, and like Jason was talking about, this time of year is a lot. And so we've been trying to split up the roles and responsibilities. I pretty much do the behind the scenes and work a lot with 25 Live, and Olivia is trying to help support the fellow position, and that piece is a little bit different. And Victoria's had to coordinate on her end. And so is it working great? I ask you all if it's been working, and I think some that are in this space a little bit more know that. Yeah, it's been a challenge. We're looking forward to the break, and we're also looking forward to getting better systems in place so that we can come back spring and know what it is that we need to do. Some of this, honestly, Paul, we need to document like how we do things. Victoria's new in her role, so she's learning as well, and so we're all just trying to help support one another. Long term, I'm hoping with some better efficiencies that that's going to help the whole operation better. And long term, we'll have a manager here soon, and that will be good. And then we'll be able to revisit, what we're able to do. So I do ask you all, does anybody feel it? Do you know as far as that when you come into the barn, Michelle, you do know?
Yeah,
Yeah,
I think
please.
Victoria has been a really good resource to people. I've heard wonderful things about her over and over and over again. But I have heard that she's a little stretched thin given the absence.
Yeah, I appreciate the feedback. Anybody else as far as I don't have a great answer for you. I know, and you know, we're trying, we're prioritizing, hoping that our outside folks that use the space don't know anything. And I do think some of the groups and organizations that are trying to get into the barn, it's been hard to juggle and manage. We've had an increased demand as far as students more wanting to use the barn at a time that we can't. And I kid you not, 156 people are at the barn. Like, there's only so much space. And as I tell groups, I wish we had more space, and that would help a lot of issues that go on. So, with or without the staffing, the same way, I think this would be an issue for us to deal with. Thank you for asking.
One last question for Jana while she's with us.
Did the barn merge?
Oh, yes.
We're big fans.
What are we merging with?
No merch.
I'm sorry, merch. I thought you said merge. I thought
no, merge. It would merge. Be cost down.
There we go. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask one last thing? I'm going to send out the slides. I would love it if anybody would give me some feedback to some of the questions. They're on the last. I'll get it a little bit easier for you. And so please know that my door is open right now until the beginning of January is the perfect time to be thinking about these things. And I'll continue to work with the steering committee so that you all know what's happening. But like I said, I would love some more input and some feedback. So thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate it.
All right, and with that, 21 seconds to spare. We'll now move on to our next agenda item, Resolution 5 on Temporary Suspension Due Process Student Conduct Reform. I believe presentation has elapsed, and now we are moving into question and answer period on the resolution. Are there any questions pursuant to Resolution 5 for sponsors Irene, Claire, Alice, and Michelle?
Point of information, are we taking comments as well? Or like statements in favor or against?
Yeah, let's just start with questions for now and then we'll get to that. Yeah. Are there any questions for Irene and sponsor?
Yes.
Motion to close questioning.
All right. Are there any objections?
Second.
Oh, thank you. Second, no objection. Are there any objections? Seeing none, we'll now move into commentary period. Are there any comments pursuant to Resolution 5? Kate.
I'll keep this quick. I'm friends with people who have been personally affected by the temporary suspensions and lost their NSF grant and just basically derailed their life and caused them immense emotional stress and strife. So anything that we can do would mean a lot to me and also other people who have been affected and also could be affected in the future if we don't take action. So, vote yes.
Thank you.
I have a quick question about the idea. So we just passed Resolution 4, which was saying we want a seat to share our opinion and now on the board affecting these issues. And now Resolution 5 is basically we give you a list of things we want in this resolution.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's sort of sends mixed messages and it's not very...
So they're actually supposed to be, can I complete
commentary,
right?
Yeah.
So the way that the Student Code of Conduct Review Board stands right now is that there is actually graduate student representation. We're just calling for more in the previous resolution, right? And Resolution 5 provides, basically they're calling for submissions from the governing bodies for consideration of the review board. So this essentially gives them a list of things that the GPSA desires for their review process. So it's not necessarily a mixed signal as in like
okay,
we want someone on there.
Encouraged.
Right.
Okay,
it,
yeah.
It's encouraged.
Thanks.
Yeah.
This is the
and then you,
format. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, Michelle.
I just want to add a point of information there too, where this is the start to a dialogue. So there'll hopefully be more resolutions as the review board continues. It's just that other governing bodies also address specifically the issue with the temporary suspensions. So we started there.
Other questions or comments for Resolution 5? Going one. Oh, Andy?
Motion to close.
Close the floor for comments on Resolution 5. Is there a second from Claire? Is there any objection? Seeing none, we'll now move into voting procedure.
We are voting on resolution 5 on temporary suspension, due process, and student conduct reform. All those in the affirmative may now raise their placards.
If it ends up not passing, we got the show.
No, we
sorry,
dialogue.
Oh, sorry. All right, all those in the negative may now raise their placards. And all those abstaining may now raise their placards. Right, by a vote of 16-04, this resolution is adopted by the Senate. All right. Moving on to our next order of business, we have resolution 6, recommendation. Sorry, Irene.
I just want to make sure that it passed with the clerical changes that I
mentioned.
Oh, review by the assembly date and also the appendix name. Yeah.
Yeah, if it's taken as clerical, we don't need formal approval.
Okay. Just making sure.
Unless there's an objection, but I don't see one. Yeah.
This is appendix 1. It was just that one. The
right.
B.
Yeah, thank you
one.
For clarifying. So for the record, that was with these clerical edits.
Yes, thank you.
All right. We will now move on to our next order of business, Resolution 6, recommendation for the graduate and professional student activity fee for 2026 to 2028. I invite to the floor being set Vice President Fine. With slides this time. All right, team, whenever you're ready, you have 2 minutes to present.
Can I request more time, please?
Sure.
10 minutes, okay?
There's been a motion to increase presentation time to 10 minutes. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Sorry, second from Vince and Melzi. Are there any objections?
2 minutes. Go to the break
room. Seeing no objections, you have 10 minutes.
Yeah, thank you. So this presentation I'm going to give right now is overlapping. It's typically just the same thing that's in the report that I sent out yesterday to everybody. So if you want more details, it's all in there. This is just for people who haven't had the time to read the report, just in case, so you know what you're going to be voting for in the resolution. And I guess I want to, first of all, thank everybody who was part of that, of those byline hearings and attended them and asked questions about the committees. And I guess to like just describe the process of conducting the byline hearings. What I did with every byline funded organization by GPSA, I looked into their group profile, understanding what do they do, who do they serve, what kind of programming they have, and how is it all relevant to graduate students, while assessing their level of engagement and what could be improved in their everyday work. Go to the next slide, please. So this is what I came up with. It's just been a big overview for all of those organizations. And I will just go through them one by one and provide a brief explanation. Next one. So first of all is Cornell Athletics and Physical Education Department, which I guess everybody knows provides discount tickets for sport games. And I guess somebody go to Cornell Hockey this weekend. It's fine. I think they're doing a really good job. And I think it does really serve a greater purpose in campus as bringing the community together to all the sports games. And I think that their use of funds for the graduate students is in good shape as they're using those funds only for increased student engagement and not for any like sport teams, you know, signing or travels. And I have to recommend to keep that at this level. Next slide, please. Beaver Barn, cheap beer, and argue with that. And with that in mind, and also other things about the Beaver Barn, like just their number of events they throw per week, it's just astonishing, and all the people that they get in there. And also, while taking into account, the financial questions like increased wages and expanded programming, I think they do deserve a raise from us, especially when we think that the GPSA is the main sponsor for Big Red Barn to keep supporting us. And so thanks, we get our coming back in that sense. Next slide, please. Thank you. Next one up is the first cut I had to make. Over the last, I guess the last byline allocation procedure that was done 2 years ago, there's a big growth. And I think that with this recommendation right here, right now, I'm trying to kind of recalibrate that and see if all this growth that we had in such a short period was really justified, or should we kind of see if all those funds have been really used as well as they are supposed to be. And as we all know, Cornell Concert does a lot, but there are concerns about the proportion of graduate students attending those events and the funds given by the GPSA. So as we see, only 15% of graduate students is attending those events, which is not super high. And at the same time, we are providing them significant financial support. So with this cut of 27%, I am thinking of this as not as a kind of stopping the support for the Cornell Concert, but kind of as an adjustment to indicate to them that we are interested in supporting them, but we need to see the benefit for the graduate students coming out of that. Next slide, please. Next one is Cornell Emergency Service, which is doing an excellent job on campus, providing emergency medicine services and also trainings to graduate students. And I am really supportive of keeping their allocation, as I think that they're essential for this campus and really important. But what I do want to point out here is I am slightly concerned the limited institutional support from university administration to the emergency services on campus. And I think personally that this is something that students shouldn't fund primarily, but rather the funds from the university should support for emergency services on a wider scale. Next one is the programming board. Same as Cornell Concert Commission. I think they're doing a great job, but the focus is too much on undergraduate students. So a slight cut here would be good. Am I out of time?
No, just a question. Can you clarify which programming board? Just for
this is the university programming board. This is not the Gala for Paul and for Paul. Thank you.
It's just all
gone. SAB. Yes, it's.
Thank you. Thank
you. Yeah, same issues as the usage was found not to be as proportional to the cost borne by the graduate students themselves. Next one is the GPSA itself. It was doing a great job in justifying where to find some money that we haven't been using historically and kind of adjusting the budgets for different committees. And I think that's a good example for other, also for the committees, but also for our organization that we're also looking into our own financial responsibility. Next one. That's the GPSA AI Act. Which is under the Appropriations Committee, which is under me actually. It was founded a few years ago to provide $200 to clubs that support diversity, equity, and inclusivity on campus. Hasn't been utilized as much as you see, only $1,500 out of this $30,000 allocated in the last 2 years. And the procedure and also the pipeline of those finances is kind of lacking some, let's say, the procedure is lacking a little bit of clarity, but also that the financial pipeline, how those funds are supposed to move, is not super good under the Appropriations Committee. So my recommendation here is to defund AIF right now. And if there is interest to write this into the Finance Commission and to have student advocacy or DISC help us to like develop the questions and the procedure to evaluate these applications and provide funding through that. Next one is the Finance Commission. This Yeah, it's I guess just to explain it's led by Anurag, who's not here right now, but he's managing the funding for all those 300 plus graduate student organizations. And the cut here was necessary, in my opinion, because of the increase last byline period, which is 71%. And I think that it has been a little too fast for the Finance Commission to be able to keep track where all this money is going, and also like to keep the application processes in line. So I think that with this 9.6% decrease, the Finance Commission could apply some stronger enforcement and guideline adherence to ensure that all those 300 clubs are kind of playing by the book a bit more than they have previously. And I think that we can still kind of not losing quality with this cut proposed here. Next one is the GPSA programming board. Yeah, during the time of big cuts, I would like to increase the funding for programming board with a clause that they are able to expand the grad student gala to a wider scale, which hopefully could happen already this year. But definitely I've gotten confirmation from Paul that next year the Barton Hall will be booked earlier and the benefits can be provided to more graduate students than they have been able to before. International Student Union is a club that didn't apply for funding this year. And I think it's a positive thing since they've had problems for the last few cycles and they're heavily undergraduate oriented. And it has been really hard to communicate with them and also kind of meaning that no transparency from their end. And I think it's a really good news since we have our own new 100% graduate student oriented professional student organization, which you all had a chance to hear the presentation from. I guess I added some more facts here. And there's also like a whole 20 pager in the box if somebody wants to hear more about it. And I think they do deserve this $2 for graduate students, as they are really getting a lot of engagement and engaging a lot of people. Do one more?
Xander?
Motion to give more minutes.
There's been a motion to extend the presentation by 5 minutes. Is there a second? Second from Katie. Is there any objection? Seeing none, there's an objection from Yu Ching. All those in favor of an additional 5 minutes of presentation may now raise their placards. Okay, all those opposed? All those abstaining, in the eyes of the chair, presentation time is extended by 5 minutes.
No changes of the risk management in quality insurance. Stays the same as it is right now. And the next one coming up is Cornell Cinema. The story with Cornell Cinema is a little bit different. Cornell Cinema did agree with GPSA 8 years ago. In 2017, for a different kind of allocation that has been added to the Appendix B. And this was during the time that undergrad student assembly completely pulled the funding from Cornell Cinema. And I think at that point, Cornell Cinema wanted to ensure that they have long-term support, at least from the graduate students, and kind of to start thinking about their own funding at that point. So just what I wanted to add here before that. So yeah, what they agreed to was like a 2% reduction every year, starting from $11 in I guess like 2018 to 2020, coming down to 9.75 and 3. Last cycle we had a deviation for some reason that I can't explain. And instead of going to the $7 that we were supposed to be in 2022-2024, we did go to 746 here in 2024-2026. So, but since this is an appendix, I find it important to be in compliance with this agreement. Good, next slide. So what I have done a little analysis here for the Cornell Cinema. So
So my primary recommendation here is to reduce the funding to Cornell Cinema, but to do it through the modified fee schedule. So in essence, to modify the schedule agreed with the Cornell Cinema, but to pass that as a resolution with this modification to the fee schedule, this requires an unanimous vote. If this is something that is not possible today, I understand. And as an alternative, I have an option to go along the original agreement, declining support to Cornell Cinema down to $3, which is somewhat unfortunate because I think that the agreement was agreed a long time ago and has somewhat been forgotten. I think that it is kind of still important to show that we care about Cornell Cinema a little bit more than just $3 and kind of cutting their funding 60%. So with that, I think I am done. No, yes. So this is, yeah, the version one with the unanimous vote, the proposal.
Thank you, Steve.
If we're running out of time, can I get a motion to extend the meeting? Andy?
Motion to extend the meeting by 10 minutes.
All right, do I have a second?
I second that.
Second from Hannaford. Is there any objection? There being none, we'll now move into questioning period on Resolution 6, recommendation for the graduate professional student activity fee for 2026-2028. Are there any questions for Alessandra?
A question about programming. If we are, for some reason, unable to get Barton, does that mean that we will still be getting the increase, or is that the caveat where it's like, no, we'll go back down?
It's not the caveat right now. And I think it would be hard to like write this in somewhere, but I would just hope that the next executive board would scrutinize the programming board over that. Yeah. That's what I hope
that happens. Yeah. I see Jason's raising his hand on Zoom.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Hello? Has the room been fixed?
I can hear you. I'm on Zoom, though, but I can hear you.
Oh, if you can relay the question, that would be much appreciated.
Yeah, it seems like several people tried to talk just then, and they couldn't hear you.
Yeah.
Would you like to put your question in the chat?
Can you try it again, Jason?
How about now? Can you hear me?
Very low.
All right.
Steve,
can you
listen to the question?
All right.
Jason said, magnificent job.
No note. This one.
No note.
Yeah.
As we can get really low, which happens.
Jessica, would you like to say it back to us aloud?
I think we can barely hear it here either.
Okay. Jason, I'll just ask that you put it in the chat and then we'll read it from the chat if that's all right. We just can't hear anything right now.
Yeah, no worries.
Thank you. What assurance do you have from GPSA's CU programming board that they will hold more events in the future? So is this GPSA or the Cornell University Planning Program? Are there two different, or both of them? Oh, GPSA and Marvin Sincala.
I'll ask Paul to answer that
question. Yeah, every event that we spend money on takes money away from the gala. The gala is already pretty expensive. If we ran the same event that we did last year with no changes, it would have been $2,000 more expensive with inflationary costs and changes. We're taking measures to avoid that, running a deficit. So, you know, our current plan has us running a surplus this year, but in the future, inflation will only get worse. So if you would like more events, you can give me more money. We can do our best. We can make cuts in other ways. So you can either give me more money to run more events, or
I would be happy to decrease some of the offerings at the gala to allow a bigger budget for other events by offering less food, less alcohol, not doing a raffle, no DJ, something like that.
And also, the programming board can be held accountable through the appendix B, where all their responsibilities will be saved and recorded. Yeah.
All right. We will move along to next question. I see Cam.
Yeah, I don't know who would answer this question, but I'm a little confused on like how funding works, I guess. So Anurag leads the committee that deals with funding for graduate student organizations, and then any graduate student organization can also request to receive byline funding as well.
Would you like to answer?
So technically the appropriations committee is responsible of kind of dispersing it around to like everybody, including Anurag. So, and under Anurag, we have all those 300 smaller organizations. But those ones getting the byline funding are just like bigger organizations who kind of need more stable support over a long time period, like Beaver Barnes example. And yeah, International Grad Students Union.
So that makes sense. I guess I was just confused why like IGPS as like a student organization was like requesting byline funding, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and yeah, it's just like the pure number of events and students they have in there. But I do need to say that every organization has a right to apply, or not if they do fulfill the criteria, but it's a more rigorous approach. Just, you know, going through the financial and doing like a quick audit to make sure that they deserve that.
Yeah. All right. So the question and answer time has elapsed, unless there's any motions. Andy?
Motion to go into voting. Second.
All right. Several seconds. All right. Any objections? No objections on that measure. So as just procedurally, as C mentioned, this requires a unanimous vote first on a motion to modify this fee schedule. This is laid out in the bylaws. And so at this time, to allow this to be considered, I will entertain a motion pursuant to the fee schedule. Xander?
Oh, okay. I'll motion to amend the, those are my headphones. I'll motion to amend the decreasing byline funding schedule for Cornell Cinemas to the $5 schedule. The better for Cornell Cinema plan.
Or this fee setting.
For this fee setting. All right.
A motion has been laid to the floor to modify the fee schedule set forth in the bylaws from $3 for the 2026-2028 year to $5 for the 2026-2028 period. Is there a second on the motion? Fair. Second? All right, we will now move into voting procedure on this motion. I'm going to request a roll call since it's a unanimous requirement. Jessica?
Yeah.
All right. And call the roll.
As we've had previous discussions regarding, I know we've discussed Cornell Cinema at some point, but have we discussed the 5 versus 3 difference specifically?
I think we just motioned to not do that.
Okay.
to a larger point, team has been having public hearings on each of the byline settings, and there's been internal appropriations committee meetings. So this is not the first time these numbers are being distributed or discussed.
And the exec board has also been reached out to by several graduate students who are very interested in us not cutting this funding as drastically. So we have heard from the community in many different ways.
All right.
I could just quickly go over through that again. So the option one we're going to be voting on right now is to reduce the Cornell Cinema to $5, which is the version of like a moderate decrease, like 32%. And this is kind of aligning with the previous step of 2017 and does require an unanimous vote. But what it does is that it does maintain the support for Cornell Cinema, while option two is reducing it according to the agreement
to $3, resulting in a 59.7% cut, which would leave a significant impact to Cornelstem's ability to keep this programming going on, which we do really appreciate.
Well, all right, taking that as a point of information, Jessica, you may now call the roll.
Great, and people on Zoom, if you speak, I can probably hear you, but feel free to use your hand instead. Jana Elzayer. Vishwa Barua. Alicia Basquiat. V. Candelario. Ana Fernanda Cardenas.
Present.
Hi. Hi, neighbors.
Paul Caruso.
Aye.
Cameron Chappell.
Aye.
Jason Chiburco.
Abstain.
Abstain.
Thank you. Alessandra Coogan.
Aye.
Isako Di Tomasi. Devin Freeman. I think Devin. Emma Rose.
Goanne.
Aye. I'm sorry, Emma.
It's okay.
Andy Garcia Ortiz.
Aye.
Irene Gattini.
Aye.
Alicia George. Malta Hassler.
Aye.
Next, we're here. Yusuf. I think left as well. Claire King.
Aye.
Here, Zongyan Liu.
Aye.
Xander Lynch.
Aye.
Clarice Meppert.
Aye.
Thank you. Tian Nguyen.
Aye.
Marilise Ortiz.
Aye.
Thank you. Sarah Raimondi, I don't think it's here. Katie Rohrbaugh.
Aye.
Dean Seth.
Abstain.
Ian Smith.
Aye.
Thank you. Yuking Wu.
Aye.
And Nicholas.
Aye.
$18 to $0 to $2.
All right. And with that, the fee schedule is modified. We may now move back to resolution 6, recommendation for the graduate professional student activity fee for 2026-2028. Jessica, correct me if I'm wrong, but this requires a two-thirds.
Oh.
Not for the modification, but for the actual resolution.
I thought we had to go to another meeting. I didn't look. sorry.
Yeah, it is two-thirds.
Two-thirds of the whole.
That's right. So I'll entertain a motion pursuant to resolution 6.
Again. Point of information. How many votes did we just have?
We had equality. 21 is two-thirds of seated members.
We're 22 people.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion.
Xander.
I'd like to motion to table this to, I guess, the final meeting of the semester, because can we do resolutions during the December 1st meeting?
We can, but I guess to add to that, if this resolution is not going to be passed, we're automatically going to be reverting to the previous allocations.
December 8th is the last day of classes, though, so you do have,
okay.
You have one
two
more meeting.
More. Okay,
we
okay.
Have two more meetings, yeah.
So with that,
okay,
there's been a motion laid to the floor to table resolution.
Can we check? So we need 21 people.
Yeah.
There's only 20 of
those. There's 20. It's like Devin was here.
Did you consider Vito Mazzi?
Yeah.
All right. At this time, there's been a motion to table resolution 6 laid on the floor. Is it seconded? I have a second from Irene. Is it taken friendly by the sponsor?
We got enough
people. Yeah. Is there any objection? Is it all somebody?
Yeah, maybe.
Phone a friend.
Person.
Yeah.
Does anyone know someone who's not here, like Devin? We can just call you. Join like the Zoom meeting. Because I don't want a government shutdown for the GPSA.
I can message him right now.
Really?
That's not actually what happens. It actually happens.
I know, but. Yeah, but it's equally
so
embarrassing.
In the interest of time, there has been a motion placed on the floor. We can move into voting procedure on tabling. All those in favor of tabling Resolution 6 may now raise their placards.
Wait, so I'm voting. Do we have to vote when people are not?
If we can't table it, then we have to vote on it. If we can't have enough votes, then it fails. That's how the...
But if it fails, then
it's gone.
Then it's gone.
Then you gotta try again. Yeah.
So let's just.
There's been a motion for a superseding motion for a 2 minute recess. Is there a second?
Second
from Andy. All those in favor? Maybe now raise their hands.
Can we switch to appointments and nominations?
Or let's finish the vote.
Wait,
all right.
We're gonna need this to find somebody.
All right. All those in favor of a 2 minute recess, raise their hands now. All right, all those opposed, all those abstaining. In the eyes of the chair, we have a 2 minute recess.
Go find people.
Who else do I know?
You see what he's
Okay, Devin is back.
Okay, great.
All right. The recess has elapsed. Entertaining motions. Bander.
Okay. Motion for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. That's what we were getting to be added to the meeting.
There's been a motion to extend the meeting time to 7:15 p.m. Do I have a second? I have a second from Alessandra. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, the new meeting ending time is 7:15 p.m. All right.
Yeah.
So we will now vote on Resolution 6, the recommendation for the graduate and professional student activity fee for 2026-2028. We'll now move into voting procedure. Jessica, can we call the roll? Thank you.
Okay. Jana is not here. Vishwa.
Oh, yeah, we should have
called
this
one.
Anu's in the Zoom. Oh, Anu. I don't think it's here. B. Candelaria is not here. Ana Fernanda Cardenas.
Hi.
Paul Caruso.
Hi.
Cameron Chappell.
Hi.
Jason Chiburco.
Aye.
Alessandra Coogan.
Aye.
Isako Di Tomasi. Thank you. Devin Freeman.
Aye.
Emma Rose Gallant.
Gallant.
Aye.
Andy Garcia Ortiz.
Aye.
Irene Gattini.
Aye.
Alicia George.
Aye.
Thank you. Malta Hosler?
Hi.
Mac is not here. Yusuf is not here. Claire King?
Hi.
Anira Coyado? Thank you. Songyan Liu?
Hi.
Xander Lynch?
Hi.
Maurice Mefford?
Hi.
Thank you. Tian Jigoyan?
Hi.
Marilise Ortiz?
Aye.
Thank you. Sarah's not here. Katie Verba?
Aye.
Seem Seth?
Abstain.
Ian Smith?
Aye.
Thank you. Yu King Wu?
Aye.
And Nicholas Brennan?
Aye.
So I have 23-0 to vote.
And with that, Resolution 6 is adopted. There's a motion, Katie.
Motion to close the meeting? Is
we need.
Can I suck it?
A motion to adjourn.
Let's just do
is there a second?
I'm seconding.
A second. Are there any objections?
Objection
from Andy. All right.
Wait,
I think we move into voting procedure now, but I think, why do you object?
We want to see Andy.
I want a position.
Right.
Position.
Is there any
I'm not opening
vote,
any other?
Are there any motions to open nominations under Section 8? Andy.
Open, please.
Which one?
We're gonna.
Fake cape.
Yeah.
All right. There's been a motion to open the floor on fake cape. Is there any objection? Or do I have a second?
Second.
Any objection? All right. Seeing none, floor is open. I'll take.
I'd like to nominate Andy Garcia Ortiz for the vacate position.
And did you accept that nomination? All right. Are there any other nominations?
Can I move to close nomination?
Yeah. We're moving to close nominations. Are there any objections?
No.
Seeing none, congratulations.
I would not.
Motion, well, do you revert to the superseding motion?
No.
Okay, Claire.
Motion to adjourn.
There's been a motion to adjourn. Do I have a second?
I'll
second from Katie. Are there any objections? There being none, the assembly is dismissed.
No, it's not.
Katie and I.